The computer on my left says it's 1:28 p.m. The computer on my right says it's 1:33. So we'll take the mean of the two and say that we're on time. I'd like to welcome you all to the second session for Saturday. My name is Ralph Chu, and I've got the pleasant duty of moderating this afternoon's session. Our first speaker is Ray Brooks, and he's going to be speaking on the intersection point and immediate area of the figure eight loops for such solar eclipses. So without further ado, Ray. To enable one mic and turn me off.
There. Okay. Good afternoon. What a great place for an eclipse conference. This is my first time here. Come in a few times for various reasons. This is the first time I've been in the Griffith. First I want to thank Patrick and Joanne for all their hard work. It's a lot of work to put something like this together, and I mean that sincerely. The venue they've picked here for this renovated facility is terrific, and congratulations on all their successes, and one of which is certainly this conference series. I remember the first day I found the solar eclipse mailing list, feeling I had found the holy grail, and I still feel that way. It's a joy to be here, and really that's the point of this whole weekend. We're all here celebrating our passion for eclipses. At the last conference, when Patrick asked me did I have a topic for 07, I said, well, you know, I'd like to do something that's different and interesting, you know, and add to the celebration. I told him I would look at Iceland and Antarctica, which were the eclipses just before that last conference. And it really turned into something I thought was worthwhile. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I had putting it together. When we all began our journey, our lifelong journey to eclipses, it wasn't long before we came across these world maps with their funny-looking figure eight lines. And it's important that we understand these because over the next 100 years, for example, more than 70% of the eclipses have this figure eight situation. We're going to investigate the central area of the figure eight loops. We're going to see what curious things are happening there. And we're going to find out that the world maps are... they're not inaccurate. I don't want that to be the message here. They are totally accurate. But they're misleading in two very interesting ways. And it's not a criticism of them. An eclipse is an extremely dynamic thing, and these world maps are a static tool to analyze a dynamic event. These eclipses, we get this figure eight whenever the penumbra extends over the top of the Earth, or the penumbra extends below the bottom of the Earth. And there's two categories for each hemisphere, north and south. The center of the figure eight can center on the noon, local noon for winter eclipses, or it could center on local midnight for summertime eclipses. We're going to look at one example of each, 2011 and next year's eclipse, 2008. They're an example of each. And we get this whenever we have a partial eclipse, top or bottom, whenever there's a total or an annular with a magnitude of greater than 0.445 or less than negative 0.445. Certainly that number changes a little bit, but it's a pretty tight number. And there's a variation on the central eclipses, which do have the penumbra fully land on Earth, but at the time of local noon or local midnight, it's still not quite on the Earth. And if we look at the eclipse here in 2041, We have the morning loop here, and you can see it's disconnected. It's not connected to the afternoon sunset loop. Yet, if we zoom in here to local noon in the southern hemisphere, you can see that this morning loop, because it's still off Earth, has it's the figure eight. So for these types of eclipses, we have a lopsided figure eight plus the other loop. And this happens about 25% of the time for annulars and centrals. So let's look at a typical world map, and we'll pull up the NASA map, compliments of Jay and Fred. And it's a nice map because, you know, the loop lines are nicely labeled. Let me just zoom out a little bit here. And again, we have the morning and the afternoon loops. Let's just zoom into the morning loop. And the first time we saw this, you know, it was pretty easy to figure out. The eclipse begins at sunrise. And about an hour or so later, the people here, they rotate into their sunrise. And the eclipse has now evolved into a maximum. About an hour or so after that, these people here have rotated into their sunrise, and the eclipse is ending. Even this point made sense. Eclipse ends and begins at sunrise. Well, it can do that because it's a grazing of the sun's limb here. It's zero magnitude, and even the maximum at eclipse. So all three simultaneously happen. You know, that was easy to figure out. And, of course, the reverse situation in the afternoon or the sunset loops. But, again, we want to concentrate in the middle here. And what's going on here? I remember the first time I ever looked at these maps and said, okay, we follow the eclipse begins at sunrise. It intersects maximum eclipse at sunrise. Well, how can that be if this area is experiencing 80-something percent? Made sense over here at zero. Doesn't make sense over here. I'm sure we follow these other lines around, and we see eclipse ends at sunrise, and that evolves into eclipse ends at sunset. You know, what's going on there? How can it rise and set at the same time? Well, of course, there were two times when the sun can be rising and setting at the same time. Instant of local noon, if you're looking south, or the instant of local midnight, if you're looking north. Now, pardon my chauvinism for northern eclipses. We're just looking at northern eclipses here. How does this make sense? Well, if we zoom into the central region here, you know, it may look smooth, but it's three lines that are intersecting. And where they intersect, their slope changes, so to speak. So they're not smooth, and that becomes even more apparent. This eclipse now, this is the same eclipse, 2008. North Pole is at the top, so I flipped it for you. Pretty much for the rest of these slides, the North will be at the top. The North Pole will be at the top. Well, I've drawn in this bright blue line here. I hope that, it shows up pretty well on the screen. That's the Arctic Circle for the day of the eclipse. And you can see these three lines coming in from one loop, and they intersect, they're tangent to the Arctic Circle here. The maximum is tangent here, and the third line is tangent there. And it's where the lines are tangent to the Arctic Circle that they change their description from sunrise to sunset. If the sun is on the horizon and it's in the east, anywhere from 0 to 180, that's sunrise. If the center of the sun is on the horizon, it's a western azimuth, it's sunset. And so that makes sense. So it changes its... these lines change their description from rise to set, where they're tangent to the Arctic Circle. If we look at the partial eclipse, all right, this is a winter noon eclipse, same situation. We have the lines coming in here, 1, 2, 3. Here's the center area, and the three lines come out, 1, 2, 3, for the afternoon. Now, we've got this vertex triangle in here. These triangles are most prominent at solstice time. And the this summer, I'm sorry, this winter triangle that we're looking at there, you can see it's quite a bit fatter than the midnight eclipse here in 08. The midnight vertex triangles are flatter. And the reason for it is real simple. For the noon eclipses in the wintertime, your sight is moving with the penumbra. So you're residing in the penumbra longer. You're residing in the daytime sector of the Earth longer. In order to do that, you need to be at a lower latitude. Conversely, for a summer or a local midnight eclipse, since you're now moving in the opposite direction to the penumbra, you reside in the penumbra for less time. That means you have to be in the nighttime sector less time if you're going to experience the beginning and end of the eclipse. So in order to do that, you're a higher latitude, closer to the North Pole. So these midnight vertex triangles, they all have the same aspect ratio. They're all thin, squatty, and the winter local noon vertex triangles are all similar aspect to what we see there. Now, if the eclipse does happen, we have one of these types of eclipses that is over the top of the Earth, but it's near the equinox time, and we had one just last spring. This was 2 days, this was March 1907. It was 2 days before the equinox, and you can see how close we're going to the center of the figure eight. We look no apparent vertex triangle. They seem to cross at one point, and it's real close to the North Pole. Even better example of that is the eclipse coming up in a couple of weeks. That's Saros. This is the same Saros 18 years from now, and that's only 22 hours before equinox. And if we zoom down here, south pole eclipse, look how close it is to the South Pole. And if we zoom way down to this puppy, you'd find that, okay, it looks like these lines are crossing at the same point. In fact, they never do cross at the same point. At equinox time, the sun is changing its declination at its fastest rate. So in the few hours it takes for it to go past the area, declination has changed. And this triangle here is actually about 6 miles wide, and about 0.7 miles high. So in all cases, these triangles exist. Back to the issue that these lines, these three lines are tangent to the Arctic Circle here, and that's where they changed their description. In fact, if we drew here's the same area. I've drawn in an arc here, all right, to show that Arctic Circle for the day. And what the advantage of this line is it clearly defines where this line changes from rise to set, where the maximum line changes here from sunrise to sunset, and where the eclipse end, begins changes from here from rise to set. So let's go back to the points that did not make sense a few minutes ago. All right, and this is a sketch I put together. This blue line here is the Arctic Circle for the day of the eclipse. Again, it's not the conventional Arctic Circle. It's the Arctic Circle for the day of the eclipse. This point here did not make sense a few minutes ago. This was the line begins at sunrise, and how can it end at sunrise? Well, this end at sunrise line has evolved. Where this end at sunrise line is tangent to the Arctic Circle, it's ending at local noon, the instant of local noon. This line is now ending at sunset. So this line, this point here, this intersection point, does make sense. It begins at sunrise, it ends at sunset, and it's at a maximum at local noon. And this point now makes sense too. Maximum at sunrise, and it sets, it ends at sunset. So all the lines now make sense. And the action really begins here on the right hand side. You would think since the moon is moving from left to right, the first event would happen here, but these areas here have not reached sunrise yet at the, when the penumbra's coming through. So the action begins here. The first contact on the Arctic Circle at local noon, everything is exactly at local noon on the Arctic Circle if the sun is due south. And to see the sun here, it must be due south. We see these two triangle areas here that on the world maps show that there's no eclipse, but in fact these do experience an eclipse. Let me zoom in here to the, I mean, here's the partial of 2011. If we zoom into the region, it's clear that the unshaded area here, anyone here in this white unshaded area experiences no eclipse whatsoever. If we zoom into the center of the loops, there's our vertex triangle, but where are those yellow triangles I had? These areas here, in fact, do experience an eclipse. And that's where I say that the world maps are just a little short. Okay, if we go back to the sketch here, and this is we said here that the first event here is the eclipse starts at local noon. So we're standing here, we're on the Arctic Circle, we're looking due south at the sun, and the eclipse begins. And if we could fly at 407 miles an hour to the west and keep the sun to our south, every instant in time for the next 2 hours is local noon. And we would experience the eclipse begin here, it would wax, it would increase, it would reach a maximum at local noon, it's always local noon on the Arctic Circle, then it would begin to wane, and then it would end here again at local noon. Okay, if we wanted to look at those three events, just one by one, this dark line here is just the terminator separating the night half of Earth from the daytime half. This arch here is just a free-form rendering of the penumbra. So here we have first contact at local noon on the Arctic Circle. The red is the classic Arctic Circle. But again, how often does an eclipse happen exactly at solstice time? Rarely. So for January 4th, the Arctic Circle is up here and here and here where it's tangent. Okay, so we have eclipse begins at local noon. And the next event would be eclipses a little more than an hour later. Eclipses maximum at local noon. And then about an hour, a little more than an hour after that, the eclipses ending at local noon. Again, this is the penumbra, just a rough idea. And if you look in here, you can see this little triangle peeking its face through. They do experience the eclipse, and we'll see that in a second. Okay. This vertex point of the triangle. This vertex point of the triangle. It looks like a single event, single point, in a single place in time. Of course, it's not. If we parked ourselves at the vertex point. From the sun's point of view, you're the sun looking at the Earth here, the moon's moving this way. The vertex point experiences sunrise because it's south of the Arctic Circle. It's not on the Arctic Circle. So from the sun's point of view, these three events happen in a different place. Sunrise, here. About an hour later, noon. Different time, different place. And then a little more than an hour later, sunset for the vertex point. From the sun's point of view, different place, different time. On the static map, you know, it looks like one event, one time. Of course, it's not. Okay, let's put ourselves on that vertex location. Again, just to remind you, this vertex, its experiences begins at sunrise, eclipse begins at sunrise, it's at maximum at local noon, and then it ends at sunset. So that's what we should see here in the planetarium program. The moon is off to the right. It's starting to contact the sun. For the world maps, sunrise and sunset are defined as center of sun on the horizon, no refraction, no atmosphere, at sea level, your eyeballs at sea level.
So this is the instant of sunrise per the maps. Now I have taken the atmosphere out, which is the way the maps are drawn. If we put an atmosphere in, we have a higher, fatter sun, of course. So let me take the atmosphere out. We're going to progress through the eclipse. You can see the moon eating up the right side of the sun. So the eclipse began at the instant of sunrise. And the sun, it's waxing. The eclipse is waxing. It's increasing. We're in the deep south-southeast, azimuth 166. And it progresses. It continues to wax as the sun approaches the south pole. It's slowing its ascent. We're getting pretty close to maximum. And bingo, right there is local noon. You can see the S. It's due south. I missed it by a few seconds. We're at maximum. Sun's at its highest. And immediately after maximum, the sun begins to set. As soon as the sun passes due south, it is setting by definition. And the eclipse is now waning. It's a decreasing eclipse as it sets. So we found a special spot for this eclipse where we saw it begin at sunrise, maximum local noon, end at sunset. And of course, there's everything in between. We'll look at that in a minute. And if we stop this here, okay, the eclipse ended. And the sun is back on the horizon. To zoom into the area again. We want to analyze this area, these yellow triangles, a little better and get a clearer understanding. What we could do, we could put in a 50% line. This is the begin at sunrise, maximum at sunrise. So this blue line here is 50% of maximum, and it's waxing. So this line here is 50, all along this line is 50% of maximum at sunrise, and it's waxing. And that line, it intersects the Arctic Circle here, so we are 50% of maximum waxing, exactly local noon. Here's another 50% line. It's between maximum and ending. So that's 50% of maximum, but waning. The eclipse is decreasing. That also intersects. All these lines intersect the Arctic Circle. And that's where they change from rise to set. So the next progression, obviously, is to put in whatever percentages you want, 17%, 93%, you name it. The point is, this area of the loops, the first half, that's all waxing events. All these lines are waxing events. This triangle that shows is not experiencing an eclipse really does experience an eclipse, and it's all waxing phases of the eclipse. Same thing here. The blues are all waning events. So this line here, this is 90% of maximum. At sunrise, it's waning. So you've already missed the maximum. So you've missed the beginning, you've missed the maximum. At sunrise, you're experiencing a waning eclipse. And all these intersections now make sense. This line here intersects the ends at sunset. So if you park yourself there, you would see an eclipse in progress. It's 90% of maximum, it's waning, and it would end at sunset. So you can fill in the dots wherever you want to see exactly what the situation is. But the point is, this waxing triangle and waning triangle do experience the eclipse. Okay, let's look at one final look in the area of concern. I think the summary is this. In this area here, anyone in this area sees the whole show. They miss nothing. They see the start, maximum, and end. For the half of the morning loop, they miss the start, but they see the maximum, and they see the end. For this half of the morning loop, they miss the start, and they miss the maximum, but they do see the end. Rule of thumb in this box, anyone north of the maximum line misses the maximum eclipse, and it makes sense because you're favoring the dark half of the Earth. up to the vertex triangle, anyone in this area, they miss the start and they miss the end, but they see the maximum phase of the eclipse there. And then the two little triangle areas here, they miss the start, they miss the maximum, and they miss the end. They miss all three events, but they see the eclipse. And if we go, if we focus on that area here, here's the main vertex triangle, here are the two, here's the waning and the waxing triangular areas. And this waning triangular region, it's a waning eclipse at sunrise. So you've missed the start, you've missed the maximum, and it sets before it's complete. So you miss all three events, but you do experience the eclipse. In the waxing triangle, the eclipse is waxing, it's increasing at sunrise, but it sets before it gets the maximum. So you miss the maximum in the end. So each of these triangles experiences the eclipse, but it misses all three of the events. It's just kind of curious. Okay, let's look at, I've got about 4 minutes here. Let's look at the midnight eclipse. Same situation, except now it goes from set to rise. The vertex here is the flip-flop. Here at the vertex spends its whole life in the dark side of the in the nighttime sector. It begins, the eclipse begins at sunset. It immediately sets. You see none of the eclipse, and it the eclipse ends at the instant of sunrise. So it sees nothing. And we'll take a quick look at that. But okay, here let's. Let's just zoom into that area a little bit. We still have those triangles in question here. All right, and there's a waxing and a waning triangle for the midnight eclipses also. And the converse is true for these triangles. These triangles do see all three events, but they miss part of the intermediate phase. In this blue triangle, anyone in this blue triangle, south of the Arctic Circle, sees all three events, start, maximum, end. But the sun is below the horizon during part of the waning phase. Red triangle, same thing. They see all three events, but the sun is below the horizon during part of the waxing phase. And if we put ourselves at this vertex point to see, give you an idea of what's going on there. The midnight eclipse. Now, I have put an atmosphere in there to pick the sun up so we can see what's going on. Remember I said vertex sees nothing. So the eclipse is beginning. The sun is setting right now. You see it eating up, getting eaten up, and if I took the atmosphere out, the sun's already below the horizon, so you're not seeing the eclipse. The world maps are correct in that aspect. Put the atmosphere back in. So the sun is set. It's a waxing eclipse, but it's below the sun, the horizon. You can't see it. It's in the north-northwest. And we're almost due north. Boom. There's the instant of local midnight. It's below the horizon. You can't see maximum. And now the eclipse wanes as it comes up and approaches the horizon for sunrise. And at the instant of sunrise, the eclipse ends. So you don't experience the eclipse, but you see the instant of beginning and the instant of end. And of course, at this point, the sun better be back on the horizon. Okay, so the things to take home from this are three rules. That the lines do not change their description where they intersect. They change their description where they're tangents to the Arctic or Antarctic Circle. The vertex for the midnight eclipses is a nighttime area. It sees the start and the end, but it doesn't see the eclipse in between. The two triangular regions for the noon eclipses really do see an eclipse. And again, nooners miss all three events, but it sees the eclipse the entire time the sun is up. For the midnight eclipses, it does see all three events, but it misses part of the waxing phase. So, a lot. I know it's a lot in half an hour, but there's. I don't know how much time we have left here. Is that it? So, if there's really some other interesting stuff, just don't have time to do it, but anybody who is interesting, EMAP Wind does a great job of corroborating all this, and if you want to take a look at that in the lobby, happy to do it.
And we have time for about two questions.
So you said something about if you traveled along the line that's tangent to the Arctic Circle at 47 miles per hour, and of course you'd have to be flying at sea level.
Right.
But assuming you could calculate, so would you basically see this sort of dipping and then rising back if you were...
No, I mean, actually, no, you wouldn't see that except for the change in declination of the sun, which we're going to say zero. No, if you stay on the Arctic Circle, the sun wouldn't raise or lower. You stay on the horizon, and if you kept your speed exactly right, it would only be local noon, it would be due south. Now, if it's a partial eclipse, and you know, we saw that this, you know, defining the center of the sun on the horizon, it's a partial eclipse, and that means the center of the eclipse is off Earth. You can see the top of the sun going through an eclipse. Right? Here it was the opposite. You know, we can see it on the bottom.
On the bottom.
So each eclipse is different.
One more question?
A little unclear your definition of the daily Arctic Circle. Is that the latitude where you can just see the sun at local midnight?
It's just take the declination of the sun for the time of the eclipse, subtract that from 90, boom, 68 degrees, 72 degrees, whatever it is. So whatever the declination of the sun is for the eclipse, take that from 90, that's the
I mean, you're off.
Okay, thank you very much, Ray.